So I've been assigned, okay, 28 through 31. Let's see. I'll just read the Sanskrit. And in this one verse, it's Ye me bhakta jana parta na me bhaktas chate janaha mad bhaktanam chaye bhaktas te me bhakta tamam mataha. This is from the Adi Purana. Lord Krishna told Arjuna, those who are my direct devotees are actually not my devotees, but those who are the devotees of my servant are actually my devotees. There's no purport, so we move on. And these are verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam. My devotees take great care and respect in rendering my service. They offer obeisances to me with all their bodily limbs. They worship other devotees and find all living entities related to me. For me, they engage the entire energy of their bodies. They engage the power of speech in the glorification of my qualities and form. They also dedicate their minds unto me and try to give up all kinds of material desires. Thus my devotees are characterized. These two verses are quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 19th chapter, 21 through 22. They were spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, who was answering Uddhava's inquiry about devotional service. Then we get to 31. Text 31. Lord Shiva told the goddess Durga, my dear Devi, although the Vedas recommend worship of demigods, the worship of Lord Vishnu is topmost. However, above the worship of Lord Vishnu is the rendering of service to Vaishnavas who are related to Lord Vishnu. Purport. The Vedas are divided into three divisions, Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, and Upasanakanda. These are activities dealing with fruitive work, empirical philosophical speculation, and worship. There are recommendations in the Vedas for the worship of Purana, of various demigods, as well as Lord Vishnu. In this question from the Padma Purana, Lord Shiva answers a question posed by him by goddess Durga. This verse is also included in the Laghu Bhagavatamritam 2.4 by Srila Rupa Goswami. The words Vishnur Aradhanam refer to the worship of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Thus, the supreme form of worship is the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. It is further concluded that the worshiper of Lord Vishnu renders better service by worshiping the devotee of Lord Krishna. There are different types of devotees. Okay, well, my mind is filling up with so many things. I need to dump that on you first, and then we'll move on to other aspects of the purport. There is the misimpression in the Western world that the Vedas are polytheistic. This is completely erroneous. Polytheistic. The Vedas consist, as Prabhupada is explaining here, as having three types of hymns. First, the hymns related to the sacrifice, the Vedic sacrifice. And in every case, the Vedic sacrifice may be invoking celestial beings or demigods. The Lord appears, the Lord disappears, the Lord appears. So this is our exercise here this morning. So the sacrificial hymns are in every case worshiping the ultimate divinity. The Vedic worldview is one of a kind of government, if you will, leading up to the supreme divinity. Polytheism, evokes the idea of the Greek gods. And there really isn't a supreme god as such in that pantheon. And those gods are very human. They're very human-like, and they seem to be just as conditioned as the humans. They get drunk, they do all kinds of bad things, but the demigods in the Vedic pantheon, they all lead up to the supreme. So it's a very different concept. Now, we have in the movement, I've noticed many devotees will try to help Westerners relax with our tradition and say, we have a monotheistic tradition. Well, that's not true. We don't have a monotheistic tradition, a singular deity. Even Christianity is not quite monotheistic. It's sort of tritheistic. Monotheistic. I came up with an extravagant characterization of our theology. If all of you will bear with me, I can try to eke it out. It is polymorphic bimonotheism. Is that too much for Saturday morning, or can you handle this? Okay. Polymorphic bimonotheism, and this is even published in a chapter of a book on the movement back in 2002. Polymorphic bimonotheism. I've noticed when some devotees get what that means, they go, oh my gosh, that's right, as you would say in Britain, spot on. Don't you say that here? Yeah, okay, good. I'm not familiar with your language. They say it's English, but I'm not familiar with it. So, anyway, polymorphic, many forms. So it's not polytheism, it's many forms of the dual divinity, Radha Krishna. Everything proceeds from Radha and Krishna, and all of the divine forms emanate from them. Yeah, that's my mother. She tries to get a hold of me in all kinds of ways, yeah. She passed away 10 years ago. But she uses these electronic means to try to get a hold of me. So polymorphic bimonotheism, we have such a beautiful theology. It's so beautiful. Radha Krishna. In one sense, my characterization, my definition is a little deceptive because it is really not just Krishna that we worship. It is not just Radha that we worship, but it is the love transacted between them that we worship. The whole point of our Krishna Bhakti theology is relation, is relationship. And given what the text here says, that Krishna says, one who worships me directly does not worship me, but one who worships my devotee worships me, which is such an interesting statement because it's giving priority to devotee relationships. And how well do we do with that? But that's the key. Even in the highest lila, well, wait a minute, I've gotten off track here. I have to go back to the Vedas. Okay, let's go back to the Vedas, and then we'll get back to this. The Vedas, Yes, karma kanda, the acts of sacrifice. Then there is the jnana kanda, the sort of the wondrous philosophical hymns, and then the devotional, upasana kanda. So these, you know, become primary, you know, hymns that reflect the nature of the human being. We are all feeling, thinking, and acting creatures. So the Vedas address this. The best way to feel is to feel in a relation to the celestial beings and the ultimate divinity. The best way to think is to think about the really, truly important questions of life. And the best way to act is in a sacrificial way in relation to the Lord. I mean, this is right there in the Vedas. It's beautiful. And of those three, feeling is most at the core. We come into the world feeling. We don't come into the world thinking philosophy. Have you ever seen a baby human? They're not thinking. They're not even acting. They're just blobbing there, but they're feeling. We come into this world feeling, and we leave this world feeling. On our deathbeds, we will not be acting. Too late to be thinking about anything. I mean, if you haven't thought about it up to that point, just forget about it. It's too late. But we're feeling. We go out of this world with what is left in our hearts. That's our process. To cleanse the heart, to purify the heart, to allow our hearts to flow to others, to other devotees, to all living beings, and to the Supreme. And the perfection, as Mahaprabhu Gauranga demonstrates it, is the overflow of the heart, a heart that just overflows constantly to other living beings and other persons and the Supreme. So this is our process, and the Vedas really demonstrate that in the Upasana Kanda hymns. They're beautiful hymns. Where are my glasses? I need my glasses to find my glasses. See, okay. So this is how we can characterize our philosophy. It is a polymorphic bimonotheism that ultimately worships love as the Supreme, the love transacted between Radha and Krishna. Krishna is known in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in four different places as Rasika Shekhara. Prabhupada translates that as the foremost enjoyer of loving exchanges. So if Krishna is the foremost enjoyer of loving exchanges, bless you, foremost enjoyer of loving exchanges, then when he sees Radha loving Krishna, himself, with greater intensity and something that just baffles him and mystifies him, this just cannot stay the way it is. He has to try to understand what Radha is experiencing. So that ananga, that formless energy of love between Radha and Krishna then manifests in the embodiment of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So we worship that which is formless in the form of Mahaprabhu. So the formless and the form work together, as we know, in achintya bheda abheda. The bheda is Radha and Krishna. At the highest level, achintya bheda abheda is bheda, as Radha and Krishna, and the abheda is the love that's exchanged between them. So this is we could go on and on about how sublime this philosophy is, but it is a philosophy that celebrates love, plain and simple. Now, the priority given to that Krishna gives to a devotee worshiping, loving, serving other devotees is not surprising, because in the ultimate lila, the Sarva Lila Chudamani, the Rasa Mandala, the Rasa Lila, in which the ultimate act is of a formation of the Rasa Mandala, the only way Krishna comes exclusively to each one of us is if the gopis, or is if humanities or souls link arms together. Krishna did not form the Rasa Mandala. The gopis formed the Rasa Mandala. They first linked arms together to form a complete circle. And then Krishna came exclusively to each one. It's not that Krishna comes exclusively to each one of us first, and then, oh, there's some devotees there. Maybe I'll try to, you know, honor them. No, no, no. I must honor the devotee first, and then maybe Krishna will come exclusively to me. So the priority is given to the person next to us. I mean, what are you going to do about this? Hey, let's take a sampling here. Yeah. What's going to happen here? Yeah, yeah. And what are you going to do in reciprocation? I mean, this is where Krishna is, okay? Yeah. Only when you guys do this, then Krishna will come to each of you exclusively. That's the idea. So the priority is given to the heart of another Vaishnava. Yeah, we could do an experiment on this side. See, the two of you right here. Yeah, yeah. So what are we going to do about this? It turns out that when someone says, look, I hate this world, I want to leave this world, I'm only worshiping Krishna. Well, guess what? They're not. When we say that we're worshiping Krishna, of course we are assuming that we're meaning Radha and Krishna, because you can't have Krishna without Radha. Krishna isn't anywhere without Radha. So there's always that relation of love. And our ultimate theological vision is of a relation of love. Now, if we can't produce that down here, which is where we're supposed to practice all that, I'm going to try to practice that with you later, Govind, okay? And okay, we'll work on that, okay? And with you too, Yadavar and I, we've known each other too long to actually try to elevate our relationship further. It's perfect right where it is. Of course, Yadavar, I never knew. I mean, he's well known for his filmmaking. I didn't know he could lead such a rip-roaring kirtan. This is unbeknownst to me. I'm learning. So you learn things about your god brothers and god sisters anew. And he never knew I could catch a chamra in the air. And I didn't either. So that was new to everybody. That chamra just did not want to stay in my hands this morning. So this is so important. Mahaprabhu's movement is all about entering the Prema Mahajali. Prabhupada translates that as the unique loving network of pure love of Mahaprabhu. Prema Mahajali. What a beautiful phrase. The unique loving network of Lord Chaitanya. So that unique loving network is made of these relationships, of these connections, these linkages, if you will. Okay, I'll discipline myself to go further in the purport. It is further concluded that the worshiper of Lord Vishnu renders better service by worshiping the devotee of Lord Krishna. There are different types of devotees, those in Shanta Rasa, Dasya Rasa, Sakya Rasa, Vatsalya Rasa, and Madhurya Rasa. Although all the rasas are on the transcendental platform, Madhurya Rasa is the supreme transcendental mellow. Consequently, it is concluded that the worship of devotees engaged in the Lord's service in Madhurya Rasa, by the way, it's also known as Sringara Rasa, so it's not different. They're one and the same. They're just described differently. Madhurya Rasa is the supreme spiritual activity. Consequently, it is concluded that the worship of devotees engaged in the Lord's service in Madhurya Rasa is the supreme spiritual activity. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers mainly worship Lord Krishna in Madhurya Rasa. So mainly, not always, but mainly. Other Vaishnavacharyas recommended worship up to Vatsalya Rasa. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami, in his Vidagdha Madhava 1.2, describes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult as supreme. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this age of Kali to exhibit the super excellence of Madhurya Rasa, a gift never previously bestowed by any acharya or incarnation. Consequently, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is accepted as the most magnanimous incarnation. It is he only who distributed love of Krishna while exhibiting the super excellence of loving Krishna in the conjugal rasa. So, that's going on up there. Okay, I didn't realize that. Okay, so I didn't need to read this at all. Okay, I didn't know it's way up there. It's really quite high up there. Oh my gosh, there's another one. Okay, good. Every temple does things differently. By the way, I'm very attached to this temple. I remember coming here in 1974, just a year after it was purchased, and when the deities, Radha Gokulananda, only they, had just arrived. And my gosh, was I knocked out when I saw them. Now, the altar did not look at all like it is now. It was just a bunch of marble steps leading up to them. There was no real elaborate canopy or anything, and the area of the altar still had the stained glass showing. So it was very raw, the worship there. But to prove that I'm actually very attached to this temple, recently a book was published of Annapurna's artwork. Are you familiar with Annapurna's artwork? For the Ramayana. It was just released, the book, and I was asked to write the introduction in the book and give some illuminations about the Ramayana. And I was speaking in the introduction about temples in ISKCON, having Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman deities. So, of course, which picture did I choose for the introduction? Washington, D.C.'s. And the manors. Okay, both. The two temples that I'm quite attached to. So, and it's a beautiful picture. Now, the one with in Washington, D.C. is only Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. But the picture that I have of these deities also include Radha Gokulananda to show how the worship of Sri Ram is also coupled with the worship Sri Krishna. And again, is this polytheism? No, it's not polytheism. It is a monotheism, but it's a bimonotheism. It's a polymorphic bimonotheism. We have many forms of the one deity. It's really quite the opposite of some other religious traditions where you're not supposed to draw or make any image of the divinity at all. There is that prohibition in the Decalogue of the Bible, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not make any graven image of me, for I am a jealous God. You see, the problem with that is that when humans love someone, they love as many images as possible of them. And I talk about this in my classroom in the university. How many of you have, you know, smartphones? And of course, everyone has a smartphone. How many of you have a picture of someone or some creature that you love on your phone? They all raise their hands. And it's usually, they're, you know, young, so most of them are not married, so they usually have a friend or a dog, you know, or a cat, or a rat. I've had some students that love their rats. Mm-hmm. And I said, so you realize that this is idolatry. You are just looking and adoring positive and negative charges of electricity on your phone. Do you realize that? So suddenly when, you know, it comes to what they love, it's all right to have many images. But when it comes to the divine, it's not all right. Not only is it not all right, it's so right because Krishna is described as having ananta rupa, unlimited forms. How many forms can a cat have? I mean, hundreds, even possibly. You know, the cat, you know, jumping over the fence. The cat, you know, whatever, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I imagine there are many ways to capture the activity of a cat. But the divinity? Unlimited. I hear machines at work. It's nice. The beautiful grounds of the manor are unmistakable. So beautiful is Krishna that we want endless pictures of Krishna, endless pictures. I have devotees sending me on my WhatsApp. My WhatsApp is so crowded with pictures of deities from all over the world. Each one of them think that no one else is sending pictures of their deities to me. So they're taking a lot of pity on me. Oh, Garuda, here, we know you don't live that near a temple, so, you know, of course, they never consider we have our deities, but whatever. And then, you know, and then they're sending endless pictures of, you know, L.A. in Sachinandana is sending me pictures from L.A., this one from that temple, this one from that temple. And I'm getting endless pictures, and this goes on every day. But it's all so beautiful. It is so beautiful. I've arranged for all this orchestration. It's like an orchestra, you know. It's one section's doing the outside and the conch and so on. Anyway, this is our. Oh, okay. The Lord's appearing again. Yes, this opening of the curtain, closing of the curtain, opening of the curtain. And this reminds me of what Mahaprabhu had to go through. It's sort of torturesome. Mahaprabhu found it torturesome. He saw Radha and Krishna before him. He would run toward them, and then they would disappear, and he would fall on the ground in agony. So, we're actually very fortunate because we can anticipate that the curtains will open again. But Mahaprabhu, in his viraha with Krishna, Radha and Krishna, he didn't know when the curtains would open again. You know, it felt like an eternity. The reason we hold viraha, which is normally translated as separation from the divine, if you look at the morphology of the word, viraha, feeling alone and far away from the divinity. which is a good definition because even when Radha was right with Krishna, sometimes Radha would collapse in separation from Krishna, even though he was right there. So they weren't really very separate, but she was feeling not close enough. And in love, you can never be close enough to the beloved. Now, let's return this to the devotee community. Okay, let's take our sample right here. Okay. Are you close enough to him?
I'd like to think so.
You like to think so? Well, I don't think so. I like to describe, you know, there's a lot of embracing in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This chapter is particularly filled, as I'm recalling it, is filled with devotees coming and going in front of Mahaprabhu. In the end, I recall the chapter culminating in kirtans, at which King Prataparudra from his balcony was overseeing, was looking, while he was still pining for the direct association of Mahaprabhu. And he couldn't believe what he was seeing because, and it's described as a miraculous moment where the devotees felt that they were all being gazed at once by Mahaprabhu. So this mirrors what was going on in the Rasa Mandala, where Krishna was attending each of the Rajagopikas after they came together in unity. And the kirtan represents that sense of unity among devotees. So when that happens, then Krishna comes to each of us and gazes at each of us exclusively. I mean, I see this here. I don't see anyone when they're taking darshan of the deities here, pushing other devotees out of the way. Like, get out of the way. I want Krishna, you know, gazing at me only. I mean, I have to admit, I felt like that a few times this morning. But I restrained myself. I didn't push any. Did you see me push anyone away? I didn't push anyone away. I felt like I wanted all the attention, but there were so many of you here, like too many. So I felt a little jealous, but I realized that in this chapter, Krishna comes if I'm nice to. This is why I'm nice to you. But you see, it's not like that. It's not that we use one another to get to Krishna, because Krishna is in each of our hearts. So actually, the worship takes place. What takes place externally is supposed to take place internally between us, that we come to each other and we worship at the altar of each other's hearts. And that is the process that we learn externally first, and then internally, second. That's our process. So later today, let's practice this a little bit, okay? Okay. You practice seeing it in me, which I know will be difficult, and I'll practice seeing in you, which I think will be quite easy. Yeah. I mean, I've been practicing for years with Yadavara. Namely about 50 years. Yeah, I'm sorry to say, that's how long we've known each other. Look, Yadavara and I have had very loving exchanges. Okay, I mean, look, as I mentioned to a few devotees the other day, Yadavara and Juhu, I was living in India, on a Smithsonian Institution grant. And I was visiting the Juhu Temple, and I was delighted to discover that Yadavara was there. So I went up to his room, and Yadavara, in his kind of quiet way, he said, "Garuda, have you ever had an Alfonso mango?" I said, "An Alfonso mango?" I thought the name was rather strange. Sounded Spanish or Portuguese to me. I said, I actually thought he was joking at first. You can't really tell with Yadubaro. He has that kind of poker face. So he brought out an actual Alfonso mango. And I don't know if you've ever seen an Alfonso mango, but they're extremely ugly. They're black, and they're kind of they're bumpy, as if they've been dropped, but that's kind of the way Alfonso mangoes look. And then he had, conveniently, a pocket knife, and he had already washed it off and offered it, and he cut open the Alfonso mango and revealed to me the most incredible color of a mango I'd ever seen in my life. Now, what you have to understand is before all this, I had been living in India, and everywhere I went to do my research in all parts of India, I sort of made it a little hobby to sample the different mangoes in different parts of India. So by this point, I had sampled the Amara mango, there's so many names of mangoes in India. So by this time, I'd clearly reached the Vaikuntha of mangoes. And Yadubaro was the one who brought me. See how valuable the devotee is? Krishna didn't give me that. It was Yadubaro who gave me that mango and introduced me to the most exquisitely beautiful, mango and tasting mango ever. And essentially ruined my taste for all other mangoes. So I can't really enjoy any other mangoes particularly ever since then. So I have some resentment toward Yadubaro. But I'm dealing with it, I'm dealing with it. But seriously, it's the affection between devotees that Krishna so enjoys. He so much enjoys that. Yeah, that's my mother again. Yeah. It's going to happen a few more times. Okay? So please, just bear with me. This chapter in which we're reading these verses and purports, this is a chapter all about devotee relationships. Yeah, but most of you don't do what I do, I'm sure. I mean, I see a devotee, the first thing I'm doing is I'm judging them. Like, it's the first thing I do. Like, first of all, who do they think they are? And who do they think I think they are? What do I think they're about? I mean, I've got a whole list of, ways of critiquing devotees. I mean, I just go down. Who's their guru? Are you an ISKCON? Are you kind of an ISKCON? Are you not? Are you hanging off the boat of ISKCON? Are you somewhere out at sea? What relationship do you have to the ISKCON hierarchy? Because you're more valuable the closer you are to the top. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a whole list. I don't think any of you should get to know me because I put you through an incredible process of evaluation. It's worse than the academic grading system. It's a degrading system. Someone asked me on Facebook, Garuda, could you write something about the Guru Tattva on my Facebook page? Just spontaneous thoughts. So I just went over to their page and just blobbed out whatever came to me. The first thing that came to me was, it is a miracle upon miracle that any soul takes up a life of Krishna Bhakti in this world. I don't care how they got there. It's a miracle. It's just a miracle. And to start going down your evaluation list, like I always do, is absurd. It's absurd. This is a miracle. A Vaishnava is a miracle. That was also arranged. I'm completely in control here. At least I like to think I am. That's the first thing I said. I don't care how that Vaishnava became a devotee. It's a miracle. And let me find out what treasures are there in that devotee's heart. Let me find out. So let me embrace that devotee. Two characteristics come along with the embrace. And Mahaprabhu is always embracing devotees. And even in the Shikshastakam, he talks about Krishna embracing him. Ashlesha. The first characteristic of an embrace, the first thing that's communicated in an embrace, and you should know this when I embrace you after class, okay? Okay, just I want you to understand this. I'm not kidnapping you or anything. I'm just embracing you. Okay, fine. You understand that. The first thing that comes along with an embrace is what you're communicating is complete acceptance. I love you for everything you are. I literally am embracing everything you are. I love who you are. And the second part of the embrace is, but I want to enter into the mystery of you more. I want to know who you are more. Like, you know, I want to know who you really are. Mm-hmm. I have suspicions. No, it's not like that. No, it's not. No, don't do what I do. Not that I don't. You don't have suspicions. But out of love, you want to enter more into the mystery of that person. Even if it's someone you've known 50 years, you still want to know that person more because that is the nature of love. You can never know the beloved more enough. You can never be close enough to the beloved. Even I was speaking the other day, I think it was last night maybe at the program, that the Maha Mantra itself is a dance between Krishna, you know, seeing us and pulling us into his private vision. Maha Mantra, Krishna is the deity that draws us to his heart, and Rama is the one who enjoys our hearts in his absolute realm. It's a dance between the outward vision, the outward gaze of divinity, as I like to call it, the outward gaze of divinity, as you see here. They're gazing at us. You think they have nothing to do? They're gazing at us, but then they gaze, the inward gaze of divinity is as in the Ras Mandala. That's the inward gaze. That's the very private realm of divinity, the ultimate private realm of divinity. So when we chant the Maha Mantra, we're kind of dancing between the outward gaze and the inward gaze of divinity. It's a dance. It's a dance of divine love. I'm not trying to promote my book, okay? I do have a book called that, but I'm not trying to promote it. But now that I've mentioned it, it's out of print. So what we're doing is we're printing it again. When that book first came out, I came here and showed it to everyone. Yeah, I remember. It was the result of my doing a dissertation for graduate school, Dance of Divine Love. It was something that was forced on me to write about the Ras Lila. And as I was talking yesterday to some devotees, you know, no one in the 90s liked the idea of reading the Ras Lila because no one was qualified. That was the assumption. It's a pretty fair assumption, in one sense. But I don't think we should assume things about other devotees. We can know ourselves. But again, part of worshiping a devotee is you don't know how advanced another devotee is. Those different symptoms in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion are not there for you to derive a checklist. You know, are you experiencing this? Are you experiencing bhava? Okay, no. Okay. The funny thing is that someone experiencing bhava is not going to say that they're experiencing bhava. So you're out of luck. Your evaluation is not going to go anywhere. Only by love will you know another person. That's the only way you will know that person. You can do a checklist. Go write down a checklist. You can measure devotees from the lists in the Nectar of Devotion. That will get you nowhere. Those lists are for us, for self-evaluation, not for other evaluation. I just learned that yesterday. So for 52 years in the movement, I've been evaluating devotees according to the Nectar of Devotion. But I just stopped that yesterday. That's such a relief. So, Yadavar, when I see you later today, I'm not going to bring my checklist. But I've already had one from you earlier that I have filed away. Several of them. You know, devotees change over time. And I've seen Yadavar for 50 years. It's worth keeping up. That is our philosophy, is community, coming together. And we can't take it for granted. Oh, I love, community. I mean, I was in kirtan this morning. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about really, getting to know another devotee. Really, seriously, and deeply. This is part of the cleansing of the heart process. Now, in doing this, our conditioned hearts may, bubble up some unpleasant things. Unpleasant reactions. We should not take that personally. Unless you're me, because I take it personally. I always get very offended. But you don't need to do that. Understand that our process is a process of actually helping all of these impurities, these sanskaras, these scars. I like that. From the Sanskrit to English, scars, really. Sanskaras, mental impressions, but scars. They're scars on the mind, which doesn't mean brain. The mind goes through the body. If I've had trauma in my childhood, whenever I speak, maybe my uncle or someone used to hit me whenever I spoke, or my parents, whatever, some terrible misuse, then the Vishuddha chakra is going to be very, I'm not going to be able to speak very well, right? Because planted in there, the chakra means wheel. And when a wheel, like a car, when a wheel goes over a pothole, it hurts the axle and the tire, and the wheel can't revolve freely. And so we plant traumatic hurts in the various chakras, in our various aspects of the mind. And these things may come up as we become purified in the bhakti process. And that's okay. But don't let it come out at me, okay? I can't handle it. Yeah, Yadavar's through with that. He has no more chakra problems, no flat tires anymore. You, I'm a little worried about. No, seriously. We need to, look, when someone has a flat tire, I mean, literally, a flat tire, I mean, you can drive by and ignore them, or you can stop and get out and help them. I'm going to help you change your tire, okay? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I love you, man. Yeah, it's really, there's some connection here. I don't know what it is, but anyway, I've never met this devotee in my life. I don't even know who this is. But there's some connection here. So yeah, you can drive by, ignore the poor driver has the flat tire, or you can stop. You can help them change the tire, patch the tire, or whatever. And that is our process. We stop at each other's flat tires so we can get the chakras rolling again. And at some point, they're just rolling so freely and so purely that you can give, as it's stated in the purport here, the whole body is given to Krishna. Atma nivedanam. Atma nivedanam. Vatsalya rasa and Sringara rasa or Madhurya rasa. Those are the Atma nivedanam rasas. So this is such a beautiful chapter that really is inspiring in terms of devotee community, communing with others' hearts. So important. So important. It really, and you know, sometimes we think, look, I worship the deity today. I perform puja today. I perform guru puja barely today. But where's the worship? The worship's right here between us. That's where it really takes place. We do all this so we can do this. Okay, I think I've said, enough. Oh my gosh. I'm surprised anyone is still sitting here. But are you waving at me, Ramana Sukha? Are you ready for a comment? You think it's time for a comment? I will honor that, Ramana Sukhaji. You're my God, brother, and I will honor that.
I want to stir the rest a little bit.
Oh, you do? Okay, yeah. Sort of stir the hornet's nest, huh? What would you like to comment? Do we do the microphone thing? I don't know how you're going to make it through this thick crowd here. Oh, we have one. Okay. So he's way in the back. You just throw it at him.
Thank you, Guru.
I didn't know he would take me seriously. That could have killed someone, you know that.
So in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, there seems to be this emphasis, as you're describing, on worship of Krishna, but more importantly, the worship or the service of the Vaishnava related to Krishna. It's not exclusive to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Other Vaishnava traditions have that, but it would seem that the Gaudiya tradition emphasizes it. I was thinking, is this part of our training, perhaps, for going to Goloka Vrindavan, where those loving exchanges are going on there in Goloka Vrindavan, as well as with directly Radha and Krishna? Mm. So within the Chaitanya tradition, that emphasis will always be part of our focus.
Yes. I mean, in your question is the answer. Yeah, I mean, I think very much so. In fact, I'm sort of known for saying, at least people who know me, that every relationship we actually have in life, every relationship was sent to us to teach us what love is and what love is not. For me, mostly what love is not, okay? No, seriously, but actually it's a process of refining the heart. As Prabhupada said, this is not a religion, this is a process of purifying the heart. So every relationship, I mean, when a devotee passes you on the sidewalk, this is a big property, you can ignore them. I always ignore them. But you know what's better? Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Hare Krishna, Like, wow, who is that person? Who knows who that person is, right? That's what I'm recommending for you. What I do is another devotee. How many devotees? Devotees here, devotees there. So many devotees. Don't do that. So yes, Ramana Sukhaji, I mean, that is, yes, I feel that when we are so close to Goloka Vrindavan, what we're doing here is getting to, we're going to be interacting with other devotees there.
That is the mood of Raja Bhakti.
That is, yeah, Raja Bhakti. And so we have that opportunity to evolve that here. So yes, I mean, I would think so.
I want to extend the question a little bit. When it comes to Mahaprabhu, and you're describing so nicely this expansion of ecstatic love coming through Mahaprabhu.
Yeah.
But we also find that he had very intense, loving relationships with forms that we don't usually reciprocate with here in the Hare Krishna movement.
Right.
Like, for example, Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Mahaprabhu was in Varanasi for 2 months, he would regularly go to see Lord Shiva.
Yes.
The Kashi Vishwanath temple, before going to see Lord Jagannath for the first time, he went to see Lingaraj in Bhubaneswar. Like that, when he went to South India, he stopped by to see Lord Shiva at Rameshwaram. So Lord Chaitanya had this unique, loving reciprocation, you could say, with the greatest Vaishnava, Shiva, but yet within ISKCON, we seem to have kind of this tendency to like, oh, wait a second, we're not really supposed to look at that, are we?
Yeah, well, I think maybe we treat the demigods the way we treat each other. I don't need to talk to you. Yeah. I don't need to worship you.
Right.
It's all part of Krishna. So our process is to be able, look, one who sees me everywhere and sees all things in me, to such a person I am never lost, nor is such a person ever lost to me.
Yeah.
One who sees me everywhere. So why suddenly we go to the Shiva temple and we can't, you know, everywhere. So that's our process. So there's so many aspects of Krishna's nature that comes through the demigods that are wonderful. But that may not be our primary focus. Yeah.
Not our primary focus,
right.
Of course not.
Right.
But understanding that they have a place within this.
Absolutely.
Polymorphic, bi-monotheistic.
Thank you for
approach.
Quoting my very, very profound.
Yeah, no, because it worked. Yeah,
I didn't think anyone would ever remember it. I don't think Yadavar could preach. Yeah.
Certainly, I mean, it's a wonderful term. It certainly came after Prabhupada, but I'm sure Prabhupada would be seeing this is
yeah.
a wonderful description for the Chaitanya lineage. And it's been adopted by, well, you know, academic scholars and much more within ISKCON, too.
What, my definition?
Yeah. Certain
Not yet.
Devotees, certain
no.
devotees.
Well, I'm going to... when I come here next year, I'm going to test all of you on it. What was my description of theology? Was, and if you fail, then I'll condemn you. yeah, I mean, you know, our task is to, you know, I just came from Radha. My wife and I came from Radha Desh, the ISKCON Communications Conference. And whenever something's labeled ISKCON Communications, I think it's usually labeled that because it's kind of like quality ice cream, spelled with a K. You know, there's no quality at all in the ice cream. So when you have ISKCON Communications, my wife and I are prepared to go there and just see absolutely no communication at all. Which is what happened, but we enjoyed it, though. It was a very nice conference. And so many wonderful devotees there. And they're, you know, working on how do we communicate with the outside world. ISKCON has always had the problem of isolationism. Terribly isolated. As long as we all accept what we're doing in here, we don't care how it looks on the outside.
Within the larger Indian or Hindu diaspora, they sometimes look at the Hare Krishna movement. Yes, very nice Krishna bhaktas, but because we have not integrated, say, like Shiva, then they say, well, that's what they do, but they're not really going to be able to unify Sanatana Dharma with that focus rather than embracing a more pluralistic approach.
Right. Well, that gets complicated. You know, then there are Hindu temples that come up, and there are about, you know, 10 different altars that have, you know, different aspects of the polymorphic, you know, manifestations. You know, it's the phrase Ishta Devata comes from the Yoga Sutra. What is your Ishta Devata? You know, what is your most beloved divinity?
That's also part of the smartism.
Right. So then so you know, you can merge easily into that. And Prabhupada was very pointed about his theology, and that's why we don't have many different altars with different deities, right?
I'm not talking about that. Oh. I'm talking about how...
We're not getting along, Ramanasu.
No, I know. Yeah.
We need to connect heart-wise, you know?
We need,
I used to love you. Right now I'm feeling a lot of tension.
Okay, Yadavar.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I understand. He threw the microphone at you, you're upset. I understand. You should be.
Anyway, maybe someone else can stir the rasa.
Yeah, we'll talk later.
I'm looking at a verse, and I've quoted it several times before. It says in Bhagavad Gita chapter... 4, text 35, having obtained real knowledge from the self-realized soul, you'll never fall again into illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme. We know as Krishna.
Beautiful.
Or in other words, they're mine. We all belong to Prabhupada. Not exclusively Prabhupada, but Krishna. He says, I'm not telling you I'm your friend. I'm telling you that Krishna's your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So Prabhupada, as our acharya, we stick with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's confusing to everybody, as you say.
Yeah.
Everybody's coming here with different ideas. Who's the boss? And they'll misunderstand it.
Mm.
So Prabhupada has got this exclusive altar.
Yes.
You know, not separate.
Yes. Yes, I like what you're saying. One miracle of Prabhupada is that through him, we have such a beautiful understanding and vision of all the shastras. And I'm concerned when devotees feel like they have to jump over Prabhupada's head to other acharyas' writings to sort of supplement Prabhupada. I don't find a need to do that, and yet I'm in a position where I have to do some research in other shastras. But there's nothing like reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita to me. I mean, this is just my, if I'm on a desert island with Yadavara, and there's just the two of us, you'll find us reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita all the time, in addition to eating Alfonso mangoes. Yes, Prabhupada, what a gift. I mean, Prabhupada has given us such gifts, really. I mean, it's amazing, truly amazing. To this day, I'm still trying to comprehend the gifts that Prabhupada has given us. And the verse that you read, yes, one has to know, one has to gain knowledge in order to understand how Krishna is in everything and is everywhere. I tested this out once. I went on a sidewalk of a busy street and went up to people and I said, I really love you. And in each case, they said, well, you don't even know me. Okay, knowledge, right? I did this over and over. Once I stopped when I almost got killed. This is very, very risky field work in which I was engaged. But you have to know Krishna before you can love him. But the desire to know him is love. So you see, the desire. See, all these people realize that he doesn't really even desire to know me. He just says he loves me. So this is empty. Yeah, it's a totally empty assertion. But the desire to know Krishna, to read in the Shastra endlessly, is an act of love. That's why bhakti contains everything, including jnana, including karma, action, and so on. Anyway, so these are beautiful points from you, and I appreciate it.
I remember Garuda Prabhu in 1974 at the Gorpurnim Festival.
Yeah.
You had this intense desire to, maybe it was 75, but intense desire.
No, 74. Okay, 74.
To return to the stage and just read.
Yeah.
Just get knowledge, just gather knowledge.
That's right.
I remember that very distinctly.
How did you know about that?
You told me.
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't share personal things with you. I mean, I love you, but I don't do that. I don't love you that much.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yadavarji, it was a strange experience because being with Prabhupada was so wonderful, but everything he was giving morning and evening, remember he gave class morning and evening, both in Mayapur and Vrindavan. This was for a whole month. That's when I was gazing at Prabhupada, looking at your film, and you know how that was a wonderful experience. I remember that. I was also looking at you, watching Prabhupada, and you know, just because this was your seva, this was your offering to Prabhupada, which made him so happy. I mean, I was wondering if I'd ever be able to make Prabhupada happy like Yadavar does. Okay, now I'm revealing my jealousy. I feel very exposed here and very uncomfortable. I'm squirming. But yes, I had that. I wanted to go back to the States. You know, while we were in Vrindavan, I said, I've got to get back. I just want to open Prabhupada's books and read them. And we didn't even have all of Prabhupada's books then. We didn't even have the Chaitanya Charitamrita then. You know, we had Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is a beautiful volume. Krishna book and so on. Different things, you know, parts of the Bhagavatam at that point. But I was content to go back and just read Bhagavad Gita and just really go deeply within it. So it's about practicing the books, not just reading the books. I think it's about practicing the books, reading the books deeply, going into it deeply. This is why I think it's often recommended to read sometimes out loud what's it, you know, when you're reading. So you can be chanting and hearing at the same time, Shravanam Kirtanam, all rolled into one. So eventually, you know, I did make it back to the States, Yadavara. And I studied. I did. I really did study. So, and I never really stopped, I guess. Because for the academic world, I'm trying to, again, translate Prabhupada's translations and his ideas and bring it to the intellectual world. I had challenges doing that. The academic community, I was the first one to do that, enter back into the academic world. And my colleagues looked at me and said, you don't have brown skin. You weren't born in India. You have no right to talk about this. Then I said, well, why are you talking about it? They felt they had a right to talk about it because, not from the practitioner viewpoint, but from the academic viewpoint, see, we're objective, so we're good, we're whiteies talking about brownies. And yet, when I show up as a practitioner scholar, it's not valid. Well, you know, I had to fight that. I had to prove myself. I'm pleased to announce to all of you the publication of a very unusual book. Bhagavad Gita Concordance. Now you may ask, what? Bhagavad Gita, yes. What? What is that word? Concordance. Okay. Well, it's got the word dance in it. So that sounds pretty good to me. And I don't know. A comprehensive word reference with English and Sanskrit indexes. This is how it happened. This is a work that I started 44 years ago. My first year at Harvard, where I was researching the Christian tradition in comparison to our Bhakti tradition, which is what Prabhupada actually expressed a desire that someone, that one of his disciples do. So I was finding concordances, 12 concordances to the Bible. What does that mean? That means every single word of the Bible is listed in alphabetical order under which each instance, sentence, context, instance, that is placed underneath. So you have instant access to every single word, like if you want to look up worship. Worship, and then it will take you to the book of Job, or the Genesis, and and give you an immediate sentence, at least partial sentence, context in which that word appears. So it's an extremely thorough tool for exegesis or nuanced research into a text. So wonderful. Wow, you could do this with the Bible. I'm sure there's one for the Bhagavad Gita. I kept looking and looking. There was none. It's the third most read sacred text of the world. The Quran has about 8 concordances. The Bhagavad Gita, 0. What is that about? How is that possible? So I started using computers when they were the size of this room and actually the Bhakti Lounge as well. Punch cards. And I gave up because that was ridiculous, right? And then I started after I came back from India in 1982, after the Smithsonian research, everyone was using computers. I learned how to use a computer. And anyway, it was gradually formulated over time. And finally, after 44 years, the Bhagavad Gita has received its first ever concordance in the history. Well, thank you. That's enough. That's plenty. That's plenty. No, actually, a little more. Okay, that's enough. No. Okay. Yeah. You see, I'm a little insatiable for that kind of recognition. That's fine. But seriously, how important this is. Now, my colleagues went bananas over. You can read the 5 reviews in the back. Julius Lipner here at University of Cambridge said, if you did nothing else with your whole career and just did this, that would have been just fine. Just this. Of course, that was insulting. It was a backhanded way to say everything else you've done is worthless, but this was good. I always take things negatively. Yeah, I mean, people come up to say, oh, Garuda, nice to see you. Yeah, sure. Garuda, so nice to see you. When are you leaving? This is what I get everywhere I go. When are you leaving? I'm not socially comfortable. I'm very uncomfortable socially. But anyway, if any of you are interested... I don't really understand life at all, but I accept it. Okay, if any of you are interested in looking through this, too bad, because I'm not going to have it around very long, but maybe there's an opportunity after class. In fact, I think I'm supposed to end class now. I think it's, Yadavar, you're married to the boss. So, it's 2 minutes after nine. Oh, you don't want. You don't want that. I've got a session with him. I don't think that should be public. It's going to be rough. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? I failed to. Oh. Well, of course. Now we're talking. Yeah. You see, none of you got it except for him. Okay, exactly. And he's my good friend. So. Yeah, I mean, Amazon, it's there. It's a little expensive, but you can get it. I don't know whether you Brits can get my discount. It's the same in America. I don't know if that's. I got a 20% discount direct from the publisher, but I don't know that they'll send out to you Brits. So we'll figure it out. But Amazon, it's on Amazon. It's Columbia University Press. You can sign it, you can do an auction. Honey, this could pay for our trip. This is actually for someone. I owe it to, so that's why I'm very tempted now to take it away from him. You know, money is always a very nice motivating factor for me. It's produced by Columbia University Press, one of the top academic presses in the world. They recognized it and did a beautiful job with it, and you really could do such nuanced research into the Gita. So when Yadavarji is bringing up my desire to study deeply, this is a tool born of that desire. Go so deep into the Gita. The words, every word of the Gita is valuable. I even have every instance of cha. Yeah, yeah. There are two pages of cha. Yeah, you laugh, Govindaji, but I'm telling you. Cha. You're lucky if you understand one of the chas in the Gita, and then even words like the indeclinables like api cha, he, that kind of thing. But it's complete and nuanced. No one can put out something more complete than this. So my colleagues are saying, whenever a student does a research into the Gita, they'll say, have you looked at Schweig? That's my legal name. Okay, have you looked at Schweig? This is what people tend to do with. Okay. Yeah. Oh, it is. How about that? 26%. From where? Amazon. Oh, this is new. I've not seen a discount on Amazon. That's great. So you know what to do. Yes, unless you want to buy this for, 1,000, 2,000 euros. Pounds, anyway. Any other comments, questions? But I wanted to show you that book. No, there's a digital version. Yeah, okay. Right, but it's a hardcover. Right.
So please click this.
Ooh, what happened?
We'll be here tomorrow morning.
Be here tomorrow morning. Yes, that's also very good. Yes, Amazon's good that way. Any other? I think maybe we should wind up now. I think it's getting a little late. But thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Nice to be back.